Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. 615-737-1025. We'll have David Poyle join us, Predators General Manager, coming up in just a few minutes at 11:15. Looking forward to that conversation with him. But here's another question I have in regards to the Titans. When it comes to where they're at right now, we've heard Mike Vrabel, you know, he was asked about play calling yesterday. All plays go through me, you know, all that stuff. I'm the head coach, basically, is what he's saying. At what point, Derek, does Mike Vrabel's defense of Todd Downing start to get the players to turn on Downing and to turn on the coaching staff for not doing their part, Vrabel in particular? Or do you think that maybe that started to happen a little bit?
Well, they can't. I mean, the players are not going to do anything now. They're going to turn or rebel.
But, I mean, frustration.
I'm sure they've been frustrated all year. But, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. It's, you know, if you ask me this question next year, like in a off season, and they haven't made a move with Downey, then yeah, I would expect to see a lot of frustration, you know, with some of the offensive guys as well as the defensive guys. Because for the last 2 years, this offense hasn't worked under Downey. And you choose not to, and you choose to continue to go down this route and expect the players to overcome, you know, his inability to, you know, get any type of consistent play calling going, then you're asking a lot of your team. And you can't expect, if this thing doesn't work out, you can't expect for guys to, you know, stick with you. I can't believe you anymore as a player. I can't trust you anymore as a player. If you, over the last two seasons, have seen what this offense has went through from a play call standpoint and you still choose to keep him moving into that third season, you're going to lose the confidence of the team. You are. Because
sure.
In their minds, they're going to say, we can't trust you to do what's best for the team. You know, you always ask us to do what's best for the team, put the team first. Well, it doesn't seem like you're doing the same thing because you choose to keep an offensive coordinator that hasn't been good for this offense since he's taken over. So if they go into next season with Downing, expect to lose that locker room very quickly if things doesn't improve on the offensive side of the ball. You heard a little bit from Kevin Byard the other day. Frustration set in. And he's not the only one. Believe me, he's not the only one. He's the only one with the cachet that can say anything.
Right.
But best believe there are players on that defensive side of the ball. And this is what we talked about long ago. And this is what coaches fear, that when you have a team and one side seems to be, you know, holding up their end of the bargain, you know, game after game, week after week, year after year, and the offense isn't doing their job neither, eventually something's going to happen. Frustration is going to set in. And you saw it with Kevin Byard, and he's not the only guy. He's just the only guy that is capable of saying something. But he's not the only guy that feels this way on the defensive side of the ball. They're not going to rebel against the head coach. They're not going to rebel against the offense. But the frustration is showing. It's evident. Just like if the whole team's not playing well, the coach gets frustrated. You know?
Yeah. You want to have a belief.
Exactly.
And you want to have everybody believing that our system will work.
Mm-hmm.
We believe in the play caller. Play caller believes in the players. There's trust. All of that.
And you've been asking the players to do that for what now? 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
You've been asking the defense to believe in Downing for the last 2 years, and what has happened? It's looked bad. So going into a third year, are we then supposed to believe you again?
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
Well, I feel like we're looking ahead to next year a lot. There's still so much to be determined this year. Like, how does it turn out? Like, do they completely have the wheels fall off and they miss the playoffs? That's going to be quite a bit different than they turn it around, they get a little bit healthy, they hang on to the division, maybe win one playoff. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios here. on what you're going to feel like when the season actually ends. Right? How it is now isn't necessarily how we're going to feel in a month.
Right. Well, I do feel... I'm kind of with Derek. I think Todd Downing, I think they're going to move on. I mean, I've gotten to that point where, you know, I think the writing's on the wall. She fires the GM. You know there's going to be changes. There's going to be some sort of new setup when it comes to the GM. Vrabel's got to understand that things have to get better. And, injuries aside, that the offense just hasn't looked good. And, you know, somebody's going to be a scapegoat. And, I mean, even though I think they should make a change at offensive coordinator. But, as you said, these are conversations that are going to continue to happen, you know, once their season is over. But I am curious of just how the players feel right now, even though you know you're not going to make a change, just the frustration that has set in because of where things are with the offense.
All I'm going to say is, would you concede that whoever the play caller is, when you don't have a left tackle and they have no left tackle and you have no wide receivers that are a threat, it makes it tough to call plays?
Sure. No, you're absolutely right, Willie. But
and I think they screwed up some things on Sunday for sure. I said that yesterday. I did not think they managed the game the way they could have, knowing the shortcomings in a real low-scoring game. I thought they left some points on the table. But in the big picture, this has not been an easy offense to call plays for.
But even when they had A.J. Brown last year, it still wasn't – this offense was still so inconsistent. You know?
They had a lot of issues last year, too.
They had to rely heavy on Derrick Henry for 8 games, and then he missed 7.
Yeah, that's not easy to call plays
when you lose Derrick Henry. But there was no – there's never been a sense of consistent creativity with the offense. There just hasn't. We can pick out plays, situations, but for the most part, this offense, we never felt as if it was flowing. Like, game in and game out, this offense is flowing. It was always, oh my goodness, it was always that tense moment when the offense gets on, when the offense has the ball. It's never, okay, let's sit back. All right, we know what the offense is going to do. They're going to be consistent. They're going to, you know, run, pass, mix it up, do some things, throw the defense off. We never thought that because after the first series of every game for the last almost 2 years, it seems like they take a dip. They get that first 15 out of the way, look great, and then all of a sudden they disappear. Or they may have one more drive, and then in the second half, this team disappears. That's the coordinator.
Right. And that, like, I take nothing away from the fact that they've had injuries and, like you said, you know, left tackle. One of Jared's favorite things to say about Floyd is it was one of their first Jared and the GMs, and they're talking about the roster and – Floyd's like, we don't have a right tackle. That's a problem. Like,
like you now don't you have don't a have right a tackle. Right tackle or a left tackle.
I think they have a right tackle. I think Petit Frere's okay.
He's going to be, I think, pretty good. But at this moment, you still struggle at that position.
He still makes mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
The question would be, just let's say you bring Conklin back. Conklin's a free agent and you decide you want to sign him back. Are you going to put Conklin back at right? Or you're going to try him at left? Are you going to move Petit Frere at left? Like, I mean,
I would put him at left.
He played left in college.
He's a left tackle. He came in the NFL as a left tackle. He played at Michigan State as a left tackle. When they drafted him, they already had Taylor Lewan, so they put him at right tackle.
I was kind of surprised that he didn't. Now, it would have been hard for him to get the left tackle money, but that he didn't pursue that in free agency to try and play the left side.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I do believe if indeed you try to go down that route to get Conklin, he would be going into his, what, sixth, seventh year now. So you can put him at left tackle and leave Nicholas at right and, you know, bolster up the middle because there's no it's no promise that Ben's going to be on the team next year.
I'd be okay.
Brewer. No. He's not a guard. He's just too small to be a guard.
No. You got to get a better
Nate
guard.
Davis is solid. So you have to replace the left tackle, the left guard, and potentially your center.
Yeah. I think if there's a chance that Ben Jones, you know, wants to come back,
I think they'll try to make him. Yeah, I think if Ben wants to play another year, they would probably be more inclined to, you know, have him do one more year.
Coming up next, we will talk to Predators general manager David Poile. The Preds get the win 4-3 in overtime against Edmonton last night. We'll have our weekly conversation with him next. Chase, Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. And as we do every Tuesday at 11:15, let's say hello to Predators general manager David Poile, who is on the line with us. And David, I think Alex Carrier might get an extra present after that goal last night. You guys snap the skid and get the OT win against Edmonton. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah, it was a much better game last night, obviously scoring some goals, which has been a hard thing to come by lately. And beating that, somewhat of a nemesis to us. We've really had a tough time with Edmonton in the last couple of years, their style, their stars, and McDavid and Dreisaitl. But great win for us, and hopefully this is an omen for things to come. We're heading this afternoon to Chicago and play them tomorrow, and then Colorado, which is another team that we've really had a hard time with. But if we can get a couple more wins here, we'd get back on the track. But it was an exciting game last night for sure.
Yeah, I look at last night, and I think that is the best game I've seen your team play, you know, full 60 minutes plus, you know, in a while. And so how do you take that and use it as a jumping off point to play consistent hockey, which I know is something that we've all been talking about, what John Hines has tried to get out of his club of, yeah, we had a good night, but let's be consistent about it. So how do you use last night as a jumping off point?
Well, you know, I think winning, you know, breeds confidence and gets you a little bit of momentum. I mean, we've been really struggling. Again, it comes down to me just one area in offense, which is clearly half the game. We seem to be defending real well. We're not giving up a lot. Our goaltenders have been good. Our defensive play, I think, has really improved. But the scoring has just been hard to come by. Our power play has been dreadful. If we could, if I could have one thing for Christmas, it would be to improve the power play. Last year, you know, we're sixth in the league in our power play. This year, we're almost at the bottom of the league, and it was such a huge factor for us. It created so much momentum for us. Last night, Edmonton gets two goals on the power play. We get one on the power play. We're losing the special teams game a lot of nights, a lot more than we're winning them, and that's to me, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of things about our team, but there's lots of things to like about our team, from the defensive play to our goaltending, you know, some good individual play. But we've got to pick it up offensively, and we've got to pick it up offensively all through the lineup. You know, like the herd line last year with Sissons, Trennan, and Gino kind of broken up right now, as it's a little things are being mixed up to try to find these better offensive situations. But you know, they have to score more. Our third and fourth line have to chip in, as well as our top players. And again, for the second time, if we have got to get our power play going. We're not going to be successful if we don't get our power play starting to contribute on a regular basis.
David Poile is with us, Predators general manager. And look, you've said it, I've heard John Hines say it, that the superstars have to play like the superstars, that you got to get the most out of those guys. And when we talk about inconsistencies, that's kind of where it has been. And I can only imagine what the frustration is like from a coach's standpoint of trying to get the most out of those guys. So what is your evaluation of John and the job that he has done to just try and get, you know, the superstars to be consistent and therefore put the puck in the back of the net?
Well, this is the, you know, one of the problem. I don't think it's the only problem, that they said too. I mean, hockey's the best team game, and you need, you know, people contributing in all different facets of the game, from, you know, checking to physical play, and of course to the scoring. And again, we just keep coming back on each question to the scoring. And you know, last year that was the power play was going great. The individual players like Duchesne and Forsberg put up over 40 goals, and you were hoping that that would be resemble what they could do on a regular basis. And right now, it's not just them; it's everybody that is below what I would call expectations. As I watched the game, I think the game plan, I think the systems are really good. I think the execution is not good. In every game, we seem to be in prime position to take advantage of maybe a 2-1 rush or a 3-on-2 or make a pass that could be for a tap-in type of a goal. Those type of situations, and I'm never one to lay this on any one particular player or individual. It's a team event, and we're just not executing very well. I like the process. I like what the systems that we're playing, but we're not taking advantage or whatever it is. We're just missing something from the finishing touch. I mean, right now, like Phil Forsberg, I believe is still our leading scorer, but he hasn't scored in a while. Our leading goal scorer is Niederreiter, and I think he's got one goal in the last 11 games. So these inconsistencies are something that we have got to get straightened out. And it's there. The players have done it before. It's not like we're asking them to do something they haven't done. But until we get that on a consistent basis, last night as proof, you get four goals. I mean, that's a winning formula for us. But obviously, one or two goals is going to be hard to win this league. The power play percentages are up around the league and we're down. The goal scoring is up around the league and we're down. And to me, it's everybody has got to be a little bit better.
David, I saw the move. Jordan Gross goes back to Milwaukee. I thought he has played pretty well. Looks like he looks like he can hold his own in the NHL. But this looks like it's good news to get maybe Ryan McDonagh back.
It certainly is. Again, we're really glad that McDonagh's coming back way faster than I thought from the injury that he had. But he's that warrior type of player, and he wants to help us. I mean, we were really one of the things that everybody goes through. But we get hit with all the injuries all in one position at one time. So you have four regular defensemen out in the streak that didn't go particularly well, and again, that also ties back into your offense, where if your defensemen are not getting the puck out of the end on a one quick pass up to the forwards, and you're spending way more time in your end, that's good. That's obviously not going to help your offense, and it's going to put more pressure on your defense and your goaltender. But we got Lazan back in Colorado, we got Carrier back last night. He scores the game-winning goal, and we'll be getting McDonagh back tomorrow night in Chicago. So we're getting healthy again, and I think that should just help our team overall. And again, I think it's that Gross has got three goals for us in the 10 games he's been up. I think he'll be back up here, and our lineup settles in here after the holidays. But I think he's done a real good job, and that's an area that, once again, that comes back to Will Mignosi's kind of leading our team offensively, and we were getting nothing from our defense, and now Carrier's got a couple of goals, and Jordan Gross got three goals. So I like the mix that we're starting to have with our defense, and having them not only defend well, but also creating a little bit more offense.
I had to feel for Tanner Jeannot last night. I know he's so hungry. He's gone through a drought here. Again, another example of a guy who's capable of pitching in on the score sheet, and he really hasn't. He hit the post twice last night. He had a couple of great hits. He had a couple of other good chances where the goalie made the save. But that seems to be another example of a guy that you feel like if he does the right things, he's going to contribute some.
I totally agree. We were sitting upstairs watching the game, and we were just shaking our heads last night. Everybody sort of said the same thing all at once. If that was last year, that would have gone in. And this
right.
year, he just can't buy a goal. And again, his whole interview sort of on the same thing, where it's either we're not doing the right things or we're a snake bit, and we know the truth lies somewhere in the middle, that we've got to get in better position, we've got to be able to accept the pass correctly and not spend too much time before you shoot the puck. It's just a lot of timing situation, but it's there. It's just the execution is not happening right now.
Let's talk about a guy that looks like he's taking subtly some steps forward here, and He was in the forefront last night because he makes a great pass for the game-winning assist. He ends up with 2 points, his first multi-point game. But Cody Glass, even for the games leading up to that, looks like he's taking more responsibility and looks like he's playing some pretty solid hockey right now.
Yeah, I really like where Cody's going. I mean, we're giving him more of an opportunity, and he's taking advantage of that. You know, moving Granlin over to the wing has created an ability to play him a little bit higher. And again, with the fact that we're not winning as many games as we'd like to, the coaches are shaking up the roster on a regular basis and moving lines around. We've got to get some stability in that. I think the coaches want that. The players definitely want that. But we've got to find a winning formula. But Glass, again, that was probably one of his better games last night. And the thing that he has that, you know, that we'd like to get more of course, is his offensive ability. And, you know, last night we saw a little bit of that. And he played, you know, some bigger minutes last night. He played against McDavid's line a lot last night. So another positive sign for the Predators.
How do you evaluate Juuso Parsonen? He had that fast start. He chipped in on the score sheet. He still takes on a lot of responsibility. I thought he flashed a lot last night with that power game. He can drive the puck on the cycle game. But he's another guy that hasn't really chipped in on the score sheet lately. But do you feel like the points will start coming back around?
Well, I think it's the same as you know, Glass to a certain extent. I think he's doing a lot of good things. I like his size. I like his skating. I like his tenacity. I like his energy. Again, there's a few things around the net that I think, again, he looks like he's going to make a real good play to score a goal or get a great scoring chance, and it just doesn't quite get to it. I mean, we're, you know, if I was using excuses, I'd say we're a little bit snake bit. But again, I know it's the truth, again, lies in a little bit of the overall process being good, but the execution being off a little bit. But I think this is a young kid that we want to stick with here and keep throwing him back out there and giving him more opportunities. I'm betting that he's going to turn out to be pretty good, and I think the offensive part of the game is going to come for him in the near future.
David, before we let you go, and I feel like I ask you this every year, but I love this question. As we get past the holidays and get into the first of the new year, have you gotten a kind of a read on, you know, movement around the league, when we might start to see some moves? I know a lot of teams are, you know, up against the cap, and maybe that limits some things. But in conversations you've had with other managers, do you have a gauge of when we might start to see some movement? And how do you evaluate that as you go through this stretch with your team?
I think this is a real little bit different year. The cap, as you know, is not risen very much in the last 3 years for a variety of reasons, COVID being the most, and the financial agreement we made with the players. And because of that, it's really going to be difficult to make deals. I mean, you know, I talked to my counterpart in Edmonton last night before the game, and, you know, he's got a wish list. I may have a wish list that I want to do, but it doesn't work for almost every team here. You got over half the league is in LTI, which is long-term injury. And when you're in long-term injury, you really can't accrue any cap space. And so that gets to the trading deadline, where usually these teams have accrued some cap space, and you see these, what I would call these bigger deals. But I'm not so sure that's going to be able to happen this year. And I mean, people are going to have to be very creative. You might have to use a third party to make a deal, meaning a team that will take on some caps, some salary, if you will, for some prospects or something like that. So it's really, really tight. And I don't think it's from lack of wanting to make a deal or to try something, but the space is just not there on almost every team.
And also, clear this up for us, because we were discussing this earlier. With Michael McCarron and his situation, the player assistant program, has it always been that he still counts as a roster spot and therefore counts against the cap, or is that something that's changed recently?
He can be non-rostered, so you can have your full 23 complement of players if you need that or want that. But his salary is still carried on your cap, which you know, certainly is not a positive for us or for any team that has that situation.
Right. All right. Well, David, appreciate the time as always. Best of luck in Chicago. Also, Merry Christmas to you and the family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thank you. You guys, too. Have a great holiday break here. Appreciate it. Thank you.
There you go. David Poile, Predators general manager, joins us every Tuesday at 11:15 as the Preds will take on the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow night at the United Center. We'll react to some of the things that you heard from the GM there and what this week can mean for the Predators moving forward. Chase Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Yeah, I really like where Cody's going. I mean, we're giving him more of an opportunity, and he's taking advantage of that. You know, moving Granlund over to the wing has created an ability to play him a little bit higher. And again, with the fact that we're not winning as many games as we'd like to, the coaches are shaking up the roster on a regular basis and moving lines around. We've got to get some stability in that. I think the coaches want that. The players definitely want that. But we've got to find a winning formula. But Glass, again, that was probably one of his better games last night. And the thing that he has that, you know, that we'd like to get more of course, is his offensive ability. And, you know, last night we saw a little bit of that. And he played, you know, some bigger minutes last night. He played against McDavid's line a lot last night. So another positive sign for the Predators.
That's David Poile, Predators general manager, joining us as he does every Tuesday at 11:15 when talking about Cody Glass. Also did confirm Ryan McDonough will be back tomorrow night against Chicago. So that's pretty significant news, even though we had kind of put the dots together on that.
Yeah. And as David Poile said, kudos to Ryan McDonough and the staff, the training staff, the medical staff. That was a very, very dangerous thing that happened when he got hit with that puck. And for him to be in a position to play this soon is amazing. And you heard David Poile say that it was well before he thought it would be time for him to come back in there. And just so people know, I had to check on this because we're asking questions about the roster. There is a roster freeze that started last night at midnight, which is why they sent Jordan Gross down, because every day that you can save money against the cap, you know, that's money you have in the till for later, for whatever moves that you want to try to make, even though David Poile just had an interesting answer on that, on the trade deadline. But you can recall a defenseman. So if they were to lose a defenseman in the game tomorrow, knock on wood, I hope that doesn't happen, because they finally got their top six back. But they could recall Gross or somebody else to fill it, even though there's a roster freeze. You can recall players as needed. You just can't trade or waive players during this freeze, which goes all the way through December 27th.
Right. And that's something that they put in place, I think, a few years ago. You know,
it's so right. Yeah. So you don't trade people on Christmas Eve or something.
Like,
you know,
sitting there opening presents with your kids and agent calls.
Hey, oh, Eric, you finally made a trade.
Yeah. That would
trade.
Be messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Merry Christmas.
Pack your bags.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
here's some luggage for Christmas. Here's a plane ticket.
That wouldn't be cool.
Hey, wait. What is this for? Exactly. Surprise. You're going to Edmonton. Yay.
Oh, man.
Here's a hat.
It's a nice toque for you.
But yeah, and I think that this week, as we were talking about to start the show, is important because it's consistency. And the problem with this team, you know, I said it yesterday, I don't think this roster is all that bad. I think on paper the roster is pretty good. It's the fact that, you know, and I brought it up with him, and it's getting your goal scorers to be your goal scorers, your superstars to be your superstars, there's a trickle-down effect. The fact that Forsberg and Duchesne aren't scoring consistently, I think, affects Janot and you know, even Niederreiter now. You mentioned that, you know, Niederreiter leads the team in goals, but he hadn't scored in a while. You know, it's
– yeah, not much.
It's kind of dried up for him, too, and he's sitting at 10.
And he's a guy that I think can do the things that he's good at and – still help you win even if he's not scoring goals. But he's a guy that by the end of the year, you hope he's going to get his 20, 25. That's what he's been. He's not going to score 30.
Right. You don't want
so his
to,
pace,
you don't ask him to.
He came out of the gate fast with a lot of goals. But so you had a feeling that was going to drop off. Now, what you got to hope for is the guys who are below the pace of their normal production will come around and have a hot streak. So Duchesne's strung together a couple of games now where he's made a big play, scored a goal. That was much needed. Remember, we were talking about the other day, going into the game against Colorado, he had 6 goals on the year, 3 of them were empty net. So he was due to come around. So now he's made 2 great plays to score goals that were big goals. So let's hope that that begins a good stretch. Now, Forsberg's the next guy that hasn't had that hot streak yet.
Yeah.
And so you hope you've got that in your hip pocket somewhere. It's going to come out because he's a guy that we know can carry you offensively for weeks.
And he can get on a hot streak.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, we haven't seen that yet. Like, it's not like he's been bad, but he's just, it's a goal here, it's a goal there. It's not Philip Forsberg. We're not seeing Philip Forsberg at his A game right now.
No, he's, I mean, there are times he disappears.
Yes.
Which is just weird, you know, for him. And, you know, one thing that I have been, I guess, pleased by is I don't think anybody, fans or whatever, expected, you know, 40 and 42, 43 goals again, you know, for Duchesne and Forsberg. Now, I thought that Forsberg could potentially, you know, get back to that 35-40 range. But Duchesne, we know, that was an anomaly. That was a career year. But 9-8, that's, at this point in the season, that's concerning. And it's just inconsistency. And that's the overall theme.
Well, you're a third of the way through the season, right? If you got 9-8, what does that translate? That's less than 30 from both of them.
Yeah.
So that's just not what you need.
And we know that Forsberg can, you know, have a hat trick one night, a 2-goal night the next. I mean, we know he can get on those streaks.
That's the thing.
You can't bank on that. Like, you can't just, you know, say, oh, this is going to happen.
You got to make it happen. But I hope that they've got that in them. I believe they've got that in them. There's two things. I heard David Poile talking about this. You know, first, they've got to generate more offense. They've got to spend more time in the offensive zone. They did a good job of that last night. And they got the 4 goals. But the other thing he mentioned was the execution, right? It's conversion rate. Like, what also makes Edmonton tough to play against offensively is they don't need that many chances.
No.
Because they're going to convert on a high percentage. They're so skilled. McDavid may not get 10 chances, but if he gets 5, they might convert 3, and that's 3 goals right there. There's certain teams where you need to generate more chances just to get the 3 goals. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? But the Predators aren't converting on the number of chances they're capable of. Like, there's that moment of truth. We have a 2-on-1. Do I make the right decision? Do I shoot? Like last night, Carrier converts the 2-on-1. It was a great shot. He read it perfect. He made the play. But there's been a lot of those where they haven't even gotten a shot out of it, right?
Right.
It's something they've just got to be able to click. And when you're clicking, you're not even thinking. Your confidence is up. It's boom, boom, puck's in the net. You mentioned Tanner Janot. Last year, those chances he was getting, he was converting. He wasn't even thinking about it. It's in. This year, it's just not going in for whatever reason. Is it bad luck, poor execution, a little bit of both, a little lack of confidence? You got to hope that if he gets one, he'll get another, he'll get another. He's working hard. So hopefully that's another source of offense that will come over time if they play their team game.
Well, listening to David also, he mentioned something that's going to be key moving forward because they're trying to find that perfect lineup or that perfect pair of guys. But they also, in doing that, they also got to find some consistency while doing that because if they don't, there's always going to be, hey, we got to find the right lineup. They switched it up last night and it worked for them. So do they go back with that same lineup? Well, if they do, then they got to have some consistency out of it. They got to produce again. And if they produce again, that's better for the players because now we found lineups that work. We're going to go with them. And in that, we can find some consistency with the players.
Coming up next, Mike Vrabel will have his press conference. There's a schedule a little different this week. We'll hear some of that coming up next. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. I think Mike Vrabel is at the podium. Let's hear from the Titans head coach.
And trying to get Ryan available, well, and does he need to practice at all to be available?
I don't know if that necessarily is the case, that you know, he's got a great grasp of what we're trying to do. The short week, we're trying to not make it as short, you know, with what we're trying to do today as far as working and just trying to come in and get back and get going. Physically, it'll be
somewhat of a short week just because, you know, the turnaround and what we feel like we can do today. And then, you know, we'll continue to add as we move through the week. But we'll still, I think, have the same amount of time in the preparation and meetings. We'll get going here in a little bit. Allow these guys to get some rest and then get some treatment.
How's the injury list overall going to look?
Well, I mean, we'll see kind of what guys can do on a walkthrough basis and try to add some, you know, individual. And again, now that'll probably look a little bit better later in the week, just being here not even 48 hours from the time of the game. So, you know, we'll have to make sure that everybody prepares as a starter and that and they're ready to go on the game plan.
Ryan Tannehill come back into the game after he gets hurt, but you know, what happens after?
Well, I think there's a lot of you know, I think that's probably a really interesting question. You know, where you see guys kind of come back and finish, and you know, there's adrenaline and there's a lot of things that go into trying to get back out there and allowing a player to finish. And then I think that there's a lot of trauma that happens, whether you know, talking about a shoulder or a hand or a wrist, or there's even things that guys may leave the game and then the next day or they're like, wake up and they're like, holy, you know what I mean? Like that, I didn't really feel that and didn't know. So we've had cases of that that have happened. So, I mean, I think that there's, you know, for those 3 hours, you know, every athlete, especially football players, put their bodies through a lot, and you know, sometimes those injuries come to light, you know, maybe a day or two after, but especially the ones that have something happen and then kind of go back in. And you know, we do monitor. I'm very confident that we monitor, you know, the ability not to make you know, an injury worse or put the player at jeopardy. Hopeful that they can, you know, protect themselves. I'm very aware of that when we make those decisions. And then we kind of go from there.
As you've gone through the last 4 weeks, what are some of the common threads that you're seeing, you know, show up on game day that's keeping you guys from winning?
Well, we went, you know, 2 games without creating a turnover on defense. You know, we didn't turn the ball over on offense. We, you know, again, Philly just, you know, wasn't good enough in all phases. Yeah, the turnovers against Jacksonville, critical. And then, you know, the offensive penalties last week, and then defensively the, you know, situational football at the end of the game, allowing them to run it in, you know, in the red zone last week, you know, were probably things that contributed to that game in general. So, I mean, I don't think there's one specific thing, you know, whether we, you know, weren't able to run the ball against, you know, Cincinnati or Philly to kind of get things going. Jacksonville felt like we moved the ball well. Like, you know, we don't really, you know, we have to focus on this week and how we pull it all together, you know, and try to combine all the good stuff, you know, that we've done and you know, find a way to prepare and find a way to win.
What's the balance between game planning for the Texans and preparing for potential impact of the weather?
Well, I mean, I think it could be windy. It'll be cold. I mean, I think the impact of the kicking game, I think that, you know, we would have had to prepare to return kicks against the Texans anyways. They're a very good special teams unit, very good kickoff. I think they're, you know, first or second in kickoffs inside the 20-yard line. You know, so even in the dome, they're you know, Fairbairn's kicking them up there. They're covering them extremely well. So we would have had to return, you know, kickoffs and be really good in that phase from a special team standpoint. You know, maybe just ball security, you know, understanding that, you know, how critical it is here late in the year when you're dealing with weather. And if it snows, it snows. If it rains or freezes, you know, they'll be, you know, the same for everybody.
Coldest game ever here, but you guys have played colder games before, so it really shouldn't make that big of a difference, should it?
Well, I hope it, you know, never makes a difference. I mean, we've played in the rain, we've played in the snow, and you know, you kind of go through a lot of these things, and we'll get some work inside today, and then we'll, you know, work our way outside
as the week goes along, and then everybody will have to just be prepared in their own way, whether that's the footing or the shoes that we wear, or, you know, all the other things that go along with playing in weather games.
You try not to ask players to do more than they're capable of. When you're as depleted as you are, does that become more difficult?
Well, I think the challenge that we've always talked about is, do you try to do more, right, and try to come up with some magic scheme, or do you try to do less and try to focus on execution? And I think there's a balance somewhere in between, you know, some plays that, you know, maybe we thought, or some defensive scheme maybe that we thought that, hey, let's do that, and then, you know, it didn't go very well, or we didn't execute it. You know, I think that there's always a really great ability to execute your scheme, you know, I mean, what you've practiced and the bread and butter, and, you know, mixing in a couple tweaks in the red zone and maybe on third down defensively. I think trying to have a core of what we do so that these parts that, you know, these players that, you know, whether it's John Reed last week, for example, or Jack Gibbons that maybe haven't been out there as much, or, you know, when Monty Rice was working his way back in, and different, you know, Andrew Adams, and now the volumes for some of these guys have picked up because they kind of know it. So I think early on you probably are better off doing less than you are, you know, a whole lot.
How did Gibbons do on Sunday, and are you hopeful maybe to get Zach back in the mix as well?
Well, he'll do some stuff, and again, he'll have to do some stuff creatively. You know, these IR rules, you know, something that, you know, hopefully that we can talk about just for the you know, in the off season, for, you know, helping the player, you know, get some confidence to, you know, return to play. And you can't put pads on a guy that's, you know, on IR. You have to, you know, take him off. And Zach is in a return to play. And so, you know, we're at a point in the season now where, you know, pads isn't really an option. So just trying to be able to see where he is with his arm and how he can use it, and, you know, make sure that he can protect himself and do some things. So we'll see kind of where he's at. I don't know if today will tell us much, but, you know, hopefully, as we, you know, just to get some guys ready, you know, whether that's Zach or, you know, anybody else.
You know, it's been a couple of weeks. How is he doing and progressing through the whole process?
Well, good. I mean, it's just, yeah, I think for the player, I don't want to speak for them. It's just, they have to remain patient. They have to do everything that, you know, is in the protocol, and be honest with the doctors and the trainers, and the independent, you know, doctors, and with the impact testing and everything that goes along. So, you know, hopefully we'll get them out there today and get Trey out there today, and then, you know, they can continue to work themselves you know, through that process as it goes along.
Is there an instance where guys can clear concussion protocol, but still a decision is kept made to maybe keep them out?
I don't know if we've, you know, necessarily had that happen. I think you're referring probably to the Denver. I just can't, you know, since I've been here, I don't think they've ever said somebody was cleared, and we didn't feel like, you know, they could play. That just isn't something that happened. I'm sure it obviously did, but we just haven't had that, you know, situation come up.
The Texans have lost Pierce. It looks like they're bouncing quarterbacks around. So how have they done it? How have they been so competitive the last 2 years?
Because, you know, I mean, they have some really good veteran players that have played, you know, other places that now, you know, Malik Collins has been there. They got some good youth. But they have, you know, Jerry Hughes is a player that I've always had respect for. Plays hard. You know, they've been able to work lately with these tight ends. You know, seems like they're really looking at them in the red zone. Have had success. The O-line's played well. Has protected the quarterback. And they've used the, you know, kind of, you know, the quarterback system to kind of force you to play a couple different looks and be prepared for a lot of things. And that's something that we'll have to be prepared for as, you know, the game starts and it works its way through, like whether they're going on the ball or they're unbalanced or there's two quarterbacks are in the game.
Derek's had four straight games, 200 rushing yards now with them. How has that just kind of been the MO and worked so well every time?
You know, I've just been able to try to get him into his, you know, the second level. You know, it's a penetrating front, and it puts a lot of stress on you from that regard. They move, you know, move, and they attack and pressure, and you know it'll be another huge challenge this week to try to limit that penetration or disruption that they like to create.
Mike, you talked a few times about defenses against Derek having the same number of guys in the box or different run blitzes that you've seen consistently from team to team. When you've had the success like that against a team before, now you play in the second time, do you have to sort of guess what they might do differently or try and anticipate the adjustments?
Well, I think we're always trying to do that, and I think sometimes whether that occurs during the game and you have to come over and be prepared for a to change things, to make sure that, hey, you know, we're going to block it differently, we're going to maybe look at this play as opposed to something else. And I think you just have to make sure that you're using your rules and making sure that everybody's communicating, you know, the front that it is, or the pressure, you know, the indicator, whatever it may be. But there'll be things that they've, you know, shown or, you know, not shown that we'll have to be ready for.
How do you feel like the Eagle responded last week returning to practice? I know he kind of joked with us, I'm full speed all the time. Clearly you can't do that when you're returning, kind of pacing yourself. But do you feel like he can do anything this week to be ready Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did exactly what you would want to do in the return to play, go out there, practice, do some stuff on the show team, ramp up the individual, find out where there's setbacks, find out how you feel, find out how you respond, and then, you know, transition. And we didn't feel like he was at a level to come back to the, you know, ready for the game. You know, so maybe this week we can kind of see where that goes and hopefully try to get him back.
How big of a challenge is it for Weave at this point in his young career going after the quarterback and keeping containment at the same time?
You know, I think that's the decisions that you have to, you know, entrust in the players, that they're making great decisions of trying to affect the quarterback, but also understanding, you know, what the quarterback's ability is, his ability to break contain or, you know, not. You know, so it's, they're all kind of left with decisions, split second decisions, coming underneath the defender, running a route, making a cut, you know, blocking, you know, giving him a shove instead of pulling on his jersey or tugging on him. All these decisions that we try to coach and teach happen in a split second. So that would be another example of that. Kind of knowing, you know, when you can go in there, when you can't, when it's coordinated. That's always a challenge for pass rushers.
Signed a couple of guys to the practice squad on the offensive line. I guess here on Tuesday, safe to say, a lot of uncertainty maybe on what your line looks like.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some moving parts. We'll see where it's at here later in the week. But, you know, Daniel and Bo were guys that we have targeted. Daniel's been here. Bo can, you know, pull it and again play guard. So, you know, they get in here this morning, and we'll see how they do.
As you see how Ryan's progressing throughout the week, how much of a help, I guess, is it for Malik's game prep that it's a defense he's seen before as a starter?
I think that's fair. I think that not only that, just, you know, the comfort level of having been out there. I think we talked about it after the game. He popped out there, you know, gave, you know, found Conley twice, you know, was decisive, pulled the ball, tucked it, made a move, got a first down, slid. So I think all those things, you know, can help. And you know, it won't be any easier, but I think that those are all things that just as he continues to develop and get more comfortable.
He's had weeks like this before. How have you kind of seen Malik handle the uncertainty when he doesn't know if he's going to be the guy?
Well, we try to ask him all to prepare as a starter, and I know that probably isn't always the case in the National Football League when there's a starting quarterback that's in place. But, you know, I think he really has done that. I've seen a lot of maturity and growth, seen the way that, you know, again, his reps are coming, you know, in a show team and, you know, trying to get him to, you know, act like a starting quarterback and lead that unit and communicate our language for the call that's on the card, the operation, the snap count, the cadence. whether we go on the ball the next play, try all that look that we try to give them. You know, I've seen a lot of maturity and growth in that regard.
I know you talk a lot about Chig and his special teams ability, but just as an offensive playmaker, emerging as one of your top guys, you know, what do you make? Like, what are your thoughts on how he's done that?
I think he's taken advantage of his opportunities, and you know, he's been strong with the football. He's made some contested catches, had some catch and runs. You know, needs to continue to, you know, to help us when we run the football, you know, like a lot of guys. But you know, say he's, you know, pushing through and continue to improve.
The role of like moving him to some of the fullback looks, was that something you guys originally thought of, or did that kind of come about as the year went along?
You know, I think we always, you know, his contact courage and his willingness to go, whether it's across the line of scrimmage or from the backfield, we felt like was there. And then that's, you know, kind of where we, you know, moved him off the ball and then kind of slid him back inside and, you know, just trying to put him in different places where we feel like can help us.
I thought it was interesting you had Landry and Lawan on the trip. Was that just to kind of keep them involved and around the team? Or
no, they just – we're visiting their doctor. Free ride. Doctor to the stars.
There you go. That's Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, addressing the media. Several things to pull out of that we will discuss coming up next here on Chase Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.